We're very fortunate to have with us this afternoon Sarah Harbison, who's the chief of the Research, Technology, and Utilization Division of the Office of Population and Reproductive Health, Global Health Bureau, USAID. Sarah is responsible for the general oversight and development of biomedical and program research related to the improvement of family planning and reproductive health technology and services worldwide. Dr. Harbison has worked in various research-related capacities in Egypt, India, Kenya, Indonesia, and Bangladesh. She studied human biology at Oxford, holds a PhD in anthropology from Penn State, and pursued postdoctoral studies in economic demography at the University of Michigan. She's the author of more than 30 articles and book chapters addressing issues including fertility change, population and development, and migration. And she's going to come here today and talk to us a little bit about what donors think about all this.
Thank you, Jason, for that too long introduction and for organizing the panel. And to my previous presenters, who gave us very, very nice examples of on-the-ground scaling up. I'd like to take a step back, and in this presentation, I'd like to take a look at how the characteristics, resources, and constraints of various types of donors mesh or don't mesh so well with programmatic innovations that are ready for scale-up or, for that matter, funding the research that leads to innovation. The challenge is to match the two sides of the equation so we achieve the maximum resources for the maximum utilization and scale-up. Let's start with the research and innovation side of the equation. Of course, there are a very wide range of types of innovations, and these will influence which donors are interested in investing. To take a few examples, an innovation may be a product, a new microbicide when hopefully we get one, or a new subdermal implant, or an insecticide-treated bed net. An innovation may be somewhat broader, thinking about a new program component, for example, post-abortion care or community-based distribution of DMPA. Even more broadly, an entire approach to delivery of rural health services, such as was developed in Navrongo, Ghana, may be promoted for scale-up in a country. And finally, the innovation may be a process, such as quality improvement processes, TQA or COPE, for example. Each of these innovations imply different levels of investment, different timelines, different organizational relationships, and different requirements for on-the-ground staff for donors. Now I'd like to look at donor perspectives on innovation, which will also be important in influencing their investments. How donors view such factors as the strength of the results supporting the innovation and the likely impact or benefit of the innovation will be important. The urgency of the issue as perceived by donors is clearly important. An example is the focus on FP-HIV integration by a large number of donors currently. And thirdly, the perceived compatibility of the innovation with the programs in the countries in which the donors are working, the level of development of the health system in that particular country will be important, policies of the ministry, and the donor's ability to monitor implementation and observe and measure the process and impact of their investments also will be very key. Donor characteristics will influence the willingness to fund investments in scaling up. Whether a donor is a bilateral, such as USAID or DFID, a multilateral, or a foundation, large or small, clearly will be important. The mechanisms that those donors are mandated to use clearly will influence what they can support and how much leverage they can have. Swaps and basket funding, for example, may be more challenging to influence processes than more projectized approaches. Another question is whether the donor has supported the research that's being scaled up. This was alluded to previously. in the country where scale-up is planned, have investments been made in capacity building and in what we call creating the conditions for scale-up? If the donor did to support the research that led to the innovation, was support for scaling up reserved and planned at the time of research implementation an important key? When a donor does become involved, it's important to note at which stage of the research continuum that involvement is initiated. At each stage in the implementation of research and development of intervention and scaling up, there are things that can be done that either enhance the likelihood or decrease the probability of ultimate scale-up. I won't go through these various steps of the research process, but I think you can think of a number of characteristics of the ways these particular processes are done that will influence likelihood of scale-up. Let me just mention the importance of, as was mentioned earlier, a participatory approach with local stakeholders, strategic selection of high-impact interventions in the local context, and adequate funding to carry through a very vigorous effort of what were the bullets 6 and 7 on the previous slide, the replication and scaling up function. With this process in mind, we can easily think of obstacles that may emerge on the way towards adequate funding for scale up. A truncated view of the research to practice continuum and the associated costs, failure to plan ahead for the replication and scale-up. A related point, and I think just Jason referred to this, the expectation that service delivery organizations would somehow just pick up the results and scale them up has proved historically not to be correct. It clearly requires planning, funding, and a great deal of coordination. A second point is that missing link of advocacy and technical assistance to move from results. I call this the bridging function. Donors may be supportive of a particular result, but lack on-the-ground expertise to provide the necessary technical assistance. Other donors, as I mentioned previously, may participate in basket funding, and this may reduce the extent to which they can leverage those results in planning with local ministries. And finally, I have to mention competing priorities, and this is probably a broader issue. It certainly has to do with decisions around important technical areas. Are we going to invest in family planning? Are we going to, in reproductive health? Are we going to invest in FPHIV integration or HIV services? So there's the basic decision of which technical areas. There's also the decision, given that one has decided to invest in family planning, do you invest in research or do you invest in direct service delivery implementation? And this is another question. And even when you've managed to pin down some resources to invest in research, within that, it requires a conscious decision to invest in scaling up as opposed to investing in new research leads. Our colleagues here from FHI know that very well, but we have to balance all of these issues. Now let's take a brief look at how these various considerations play out with different donors. And I'd like to just make the disclaimer that obviously I know a lot more about one donor than the rest of them. I'm going to discuss that one last, just to be fair. And also, this is not intended to be a comprehensive analysis of any of these organizations or donors, but rather looking at the structure of those organizations and see how that maps against the various things that we know that need to happen in that research to practice continuum and see where we think they may have a relative advantage or relative challenges, which would clearly lead to a need for coordination with other players in the field. Whoops. Can I make this go back?
Yeah.
There we are. Thank you. Let me start with WHO, which is not a donor in the same sense that multilaterals and other bilaterals may be, but clearly a major channel for promotion of utilization and an important consultative body that provides a venue for global vetting of research results and for incorporation of practices, research results, into guidelines, policies, and other important statements. It provides global technical leadership, standard setting, and dissemination. USAID works very closely with WHO, as do our cooperating agencies, to feed research results into those guidelines. It also collaborates with an initiative called the Implementing Best Practices Initiative. This is a consortium of donors, cooperating agencies, that's produced important document called A Guide to Fostering Change to Scale Up, and is obviously right on topic of this panel today. I'd like to just mention that this document, as all documents, something else needs to happen. What's the next step? As good as a document can be, we really have to ask, what's the link with the field? This is more challenging and requires on-the-ground presence. I would suggest that, with the exception, perhaps, of some of the very good work that's been done by ExpandNet, this is one of the more challenging areas for WHO. It's not their relative expertise. They don't implement large-scale large-scale programs on the ground. And typically, when they do it most effectively, it's through linkage with other organizations. For example, the collaboration of ExpandNet with IRH, a cooperating agency who does have on-the-ground experience, I think highlights the important complementarity in order to get important results scaled up. Let me move quickly to DFID. DFID has a strong focus on family planning and reproductive health as a technical area and on investments in research. A couple of recent very important documents and statements have highlighted this. The return of the population growth factor, which I think many of you may be familiar with, made a major policy support for greater investments in access to sexual and reproductive health and services, and also investments in international health research. Key recommendations of that statement included ensuring the availability of contraceptive supplies and eliminating a wide range of barriers to family planning. Given that this was a policy statement and not necessarily a detailed programmatic statement, this may not be surprising, but there's relatively less discussion in that document on how to do what will be what's recommended, or the idea that there are effective approaches already available, just waiting for scale-up. Another key document from DFID is the 2008-15 Research Strategy, the health component. It reflects a strong commitment, commitment of approximately £1 billion over the next 5 years. It's a strong commitment to research and to applying research. But again, it has puts relatively less focus on how this will be accomplished. Recommendations of that document include supporting capability to do and use research, reliable and long-term appropriate funding, access to global research networks, and again, one key focus within the health area is operational research to make health systems more effective. The challenge here is we don't know exactly how this utilization is going to come about. Fair enough, this is a strategy we're at the beginning. We'll have to see how it plays out. But there are a couple of challenges for DFID in their structure, I think, and their process. First of all, as a bilateral donor, they participate in basket funding, and I think this will create certain challenges in moving the research results that they produce into actual programs on the ground. They typically don't have a large on-the-ground presence. The other process is that they intend to fund this research through individual grants to individual organizations. So you have a very diverse set of organizations working on individual research topics on the one hand, and a mechanism for funding bilateral programs on the other that don't match up so well. Again, we're very thankful for the investments in research. I think it highlights the need to make sure that we coordinate very effectively so that their investments in research can perhaps be fed into other programs that do have a much stronger presence on the ground. Let me move quickly to the discussion of one large foundation, the Gates Foundation. Of course, they've been making investments in research for many years, but let me focus on the recently issued reproductive health strategy, which provides substantial support for clinical research, program research, and utilization and scaling up through grants, individual grants, but these are grants to in-country organizations in sub-Saharan Africa and Southern Asia. They will include earmarked support for global advocacy, an important piece, country action, which is their in-country research and scaling up component, and very positively, I think, funds for utilization of already existing best practices, as well as testing new innovations. They include a learning agenda, which I think is exceptionally important. Operations research wrapped around their funds for implementation of service delivery, focusing on a whole range of issues designed to increase effective family planning. And also, we haven't heard much about, but an important focus on looking at the cost effectiveness of interventions to better integrate family planning and HIV. So I think this is a very positive direction. I'm really heartened by the focus on research, the focus on utilization, and the willingness to earmark those funds at the front end of the process. Let me move to USAID. The objective of the Population Reproductive Health Office within Global Health, you see at the top of the slide. The three bullets below are the three results. I'm going to try not to talk in AIDS speak because it is kind of silly. What I would like you to do is look at the second bullet, which is really the research bullet, knowledge generated and organized and disseminated. The bullets 1 and 3 really have to do with the dissemination function. Bullet 1 is the global leadership, making sure that the research gets incorporated into WHO guidelines, and I think other bilateral activities also. I think we do pretty well linking with WHO. I think we do less well in making sure that we're in good touch and sharing information with other bilateral donors such as DFID, CETA, and a whole range of them. I think we need to work on that. And then the bullet 3 is our linkage of the research activities with our field programs so that we are feeding our research results directly to bilateral programs in the field as well as to the cooperating agencies that work with us that also implement our work in the field. Let me just mention there's certainly I keep looking at you kind of paranoid. How much time do I have? Not much. Okay. Let me move forward here. AIDS process, I think it's been multifaceted. That's not to say that it's been perfect by any means, but what we have tried to do is build funds into research agreements for bridging and implementation of the innovations. We try to provide missions with the technical assistance that's needed. Advocacy, I would mention also, is needed. This was mentioned earlier that we need to advocate for the importance of the interventions as well as provide the funding for them. So we need to work closer with missions. We work closely with WHO to incorporate our findings into guidelines. And We work with trying to fund our cooperating agencies to facilitate utilization, including a whole range of websites and more globally focused dissemination efforts. Let me just mention quickly, also we need to better coordinate our research activities and programs and projects with our service delivery programs and projects so that when the results become available, there are funds for bridging the linkages between the two. The way forward, what can donors do? We can continue to fund research and utilization, and I think that we can, I've tried to highlight a number of points in that research continuum that we can focus on. We need to certainly systematically support meetings and exchanges. We need to provide funding explicitly for research utilization to a whole range of organizations, including research organizations, but also service delivery organizations. And my next to last slide, what can national governments do? Since investment in research and research utilization is all aimed at the improvement of policies, programs, and practice in developing countries, the governments of those countries are the ultimate consumers of the activities and must drive the process. This includes playing a very important role in the push and pull aspects of research utilization. It means governments should be involved in priority setting, approval and implementation of research, and in dissemination. It implies that national governments should be involved in every, should be involving local stakeholders at every step, and that they, we should be identifying local champions in countries and more in regions and in decentralized settings to be taking up the innovations that we're promoting. And the promotion of evidence-based decision-making is crucial, not only at the central level, but at the provincial or the district level. This implies a capacity building far broader than the central Ministry of Health, but we need managers at those levels to make them good consumers of program research. In closing, in the next 10 seconds, let me just say that if we're going to continue to advocate for and, in fact, justify greater investments in program research, and I certainly think we should, then we absolutely must do everything possible to assure that the results of that research are used as broadly as possible for the betterment of programs. Thank you. Okay. Any questions?
Okay. Okay. Well, let me take this opportunity to take 1 minute to close up the session. Let me thank our panelists for agreeing to come here and put in the work to make what I thought was a fine set of presentations. I enjoyed hearing from Laura Guerin, who went over for us the principles, elements, types of scaling up, and the 9-step process for designing a scale-up strategy. I think Susan's presentation reinforced for us the importance of having mutually reinforcing efforts to ensure sustainability in our work, and the importance of creating and managing a good social reputation when you're trying to do scaling up. I particularly liked her chart for analyzing vertical scaling, and I think I'll probably try to use that as a way to identify places where things are working, where things aren't. For my own presentation, I hope that you learned a little bit of something about FHI's strategy for expanding CBD of DMPA and using it to create momentum for a best practice. And I appreciate Sarah's discussion talking to us about factors that are important to donors, some of the obstacles to scale up, some of the varying perspectives that donors might have when they think about scale up, and what donors might be able to do to help us all with our way forward. So thank you so much to the panel, and thanks for coming.
Probably didn't want them to keep it. Because she was with care. at that time, I think.
One of the things that we do is we foster research utilization generally. We try to pick two things.
Okay. Do you have a car?
Potential.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So you're based in
practice wide.
Okay.
And to use those, to drive those themes for a while. One of the themes
that we're very interested in a lot with is the CDs and playing the immigrant.
But another one of the themes that we're doing a lot with is CBD and DMD.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great one. As you can tell, some of us really believe in that.
Well, you know, we're willing to work with anybody. might be some kind of way that we can do something. If CBD of DMP is something that you're interested in, we can certainly put that on the agenda. I think CBD of DMPA has some nice aspects to it because we invest a lot of effort into it under our contraceptive technology agreement.
Okay.
Now, that agreement is
okay.
Short.
How are you?
Right.
Good.
But CBD of DMPA will also be a thing.
I sure will.
Interest under our new progress project.
The progress project, which is the new kind of planning project, from it's the follow-on to Frontiers, but we kind of got it from the Population Council.
I recently wrote kind of an expanded project.
Oh, good, good. Well, she knows everything. She's got her finger on the pulse.
That's where he was trying to channel. He was saying, okay, you have to fit into our work plan, and if you can do this, maybe we can do something together.
Yeah, no, but that was a big note.
Of course, integration of family planning into comprehensive health care, which is what CCH members do.
If you can't get enough time with him, you send me an email, okay? It's nice to meet you.
It's also maybe a little different paradigm than having to go through the Ministry of Health and the University sort of framework in order to get to
happy to do it. We'll put it on the agenda and see if you can.
Okay, well, mention it to Mike.